Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew to you. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, and we have a newcomer, but let's start off with our newcomer, Frank Loveridge, retired Secret Service. You may recognize him from Fox News and Newsmax and all the major sources, so appreciate Frank being on the show. Also, Rich Asteropoli, and Rich, you know, he's also been on the show. He's been on for a few weeks now, and also retired Secret Service. And then Marlon, his second time this week, and second time on the show too. Marlon, the IA guy, he is a retired sergeant from LAPD. And your last name is not on the thing, but Marcino or Marcici, or help me out. What's the last name, Marlon? I'm having a mental block and your mic's muted, but you know, it helps better when you unmute your microphone. But you have pretty lips though.
Marcici. I save you the butcher stop
How did I mess that up? All right, cool. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. Appreciate it. A shout out to our sponsors, our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com, and our satellite sponsor, thanks to ComplianceTechnologies.com. We're wrapping up our fifth week on satellite radio. Thank you guys so much. Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're streaming to about 1.5 million people right now. Also, TwoBells.com. They built their new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. And hey, we got some really cool gear there. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for curating our content. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com. And finally, lawofficer.com. Thanks to all these other things for helping make this show happen. Now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? I'm going to whet the appetite with some of the titles. Our first one's a main story. They have a tendency to be a little bit deeper. We've got NYC, New York City, subway assaults. And actually, Rich said this to me, subway assaults are up 19%, with many of the attacks coming against what group of people? Police officers, if you guys can believe that. It's true. And Rich has got a theory on why that's happening. I want to hear that on the show. Also, Supreme Court snubs Seattle cops that are seeking anonymity for the January 6th rally attendance. There's a story there. And they're not happy with the results. We got a body cam. It shows officers being stabbed twice in an ambush attack during a traffic stop. And this cop's in a fight for his life. We've got another one. A man charges a sergeant with a knife, resulting in a fatal shooting at an assisted living facility. So we got two. Then we got Supreme Court tosses the ruling against a Minneapolis police officer in the George Floyd riot case. We got Casper police released footage of a fatal shooting of a homeowner, it's a female, during response to a burglary call. And then finally, domestic violence suspect shot by police when he holds an object in his hand and he takes a shooting stance with it after they get done chasing this guy around. And they end up lighting this guy up. So if you guys are ready, let's go and jump into the main story. There's two sources. The one that Rich Asteropoli sent me, it's NewYorkPost.com. I also found it on Red Voice Media, you know, RVMNews.com. New York City subway assaults are up 19%, with many of the attacks coming against police officers, stats show. And so it's kind of interesting because, you know, Rich, we've been talking about this for a while, and you've been talking about we've been talking about the pendulum swinging back, but we've been talking about all the violence and you've had a theory which makes a lot of sense to me on why all this stuff is happening. The article says that more subway riders have been reported being punched and kicked and stabbed. I mean, crap. So far this year compared to last year, many of them were police officers, according to the NYPD. And here's some stats: felony assault up 19% in transit. And that is up, that it's 214 incidents at this point in 2025. And it was 255 as of Sunday, according to the NYPD. And it goes on to say that out of the 255 assaults so far this year, 93 or 36% of those were on city police officers or MTA workers. And during the same span of time in 2019, there were 44 of the 154 people assaulted, or nearly 30%, were performing law enforcement duties. And it goes on to say that these incidents have skyrocketed a stunning 66% when compared to 2019, which was, of course, before the pandemic happened. And that was when they had 154, they call them strap hangers, I guess, reported being assaulted. Retired NYPD detective and John Jay College adjunct professor Michael Alcazar, he blamed it. Now, that what he says is that it's a bunch of things: mentally ill people being on the subway and the criminal justice system. And it talks about the homeless population, emotionally disturbed people, EDPs, the warmer weather. Prosecutors are unable to keep people in jail. They're letting them back on the street. He said that it emboldens the criminals and they get out and then they're back in business the next day. Rich, what do you, I mean, this is pretty much, I'm preaching to the choir on this thing. Can you dummy it down for the people watching the show and for the rest of us on your, you know, your vision of why all this is going on?
Sure. For the people listening to the radio show, we're not talking here about cops that are off duty or in plain clothes. These are uniformed cops on patrol in the subways are getting attacked. And if you've never been in New York City subway, not every station is the size of Grand Central. These are small, confined spaces. So you can imagine the problems that occur here. If you're a cop and you end up rolling around on the floor of a station with an EDP, or in some cases, multiple EDPs. But the bad guys have become so emboldened by these woke liberal DEI prosecutors that I've come to the conclusion that the only difference between one of these woke liberal DEI prosecutors and defense counsel is who pays them, right? There's no line here anymore. No one gets prosecuted for crimes, let alone, you know, touching a female on a subway car, pickpocketing, stealing someone's bag. You know, that's bad enough. Now you got to worry about not only getting thrown off of a platform in front of an oncoming train, but can you imagine being a cop on patrol and you got, you know, 10 guys attacking you in uniform in the middle of the day? This isn't like it happened at 3 a.m. in some train platform on the outskirts of Manhattan. This is midtown Manhattan that this is going on. And it all comes down to people like the district attorney, Alvin Bragg. They don't prosecute anyone, let alone letting them out on bail. They don't even authorize an arrest. That's the kind of levels of craziness this has gotten to. And it's not just New York, it's Chicago and Los Angeles and all the other woke cities, Colorado. No one gets arrested anymore, right? That's what we've come down to.
Well, I would say one thing, President Trump, former President Trump was actually investigated and arrested back in New York City by Alvin Bragg. But I'm going to tell you one of the biggest problems we have. We had a president that, well, he ran on law and order, and we had an open border for 4 years. And you have all of these gangs from Venezuela and from El Salvador coming into the country, and that's making the job much tougher on the these people are ruthless. They are absolutely ruthless, and this is becoming a problem for our law enforcement agencies as well. And the fact that we have, you know, a revolving door in our criminal justice system doesn't help at all either. So until we fix that and we get these people removed from our country, we're going to continue to see this kind of problems in all of our central cities.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's going to happen overnight, Frank. Marlon. Yeah.
No, it will. Go ahead.
Well, go ahead, gentlemen.
Yeah, I was going to say that I'm going to fall in line along with what Rich said. The accountability is on the justice system. I mean, I've spent my last 2 years working the trains, all the subways in Los Angeles. We took the contract from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's back in 2017, and we had a contract for 5 years. One of the highlights as to why LAPD took over is because response time, believe it or not, was like 6 minutes. And we're headquarters to the nearest platform. I mean, come on, it's not even 45 seconds. And response time was just a real, real big challenge for the commissioners. With that being said, I don't know what it is now because I've been gone for over 2 years. But to Frank's point, I could imagine with, you know, a lot of, there's probably more transients and more people taking the trains, and which is causing this uptick in violence. And lucky us, fortunately, in my time there, we really didn't have that many assaults on uniform officers. But I can only imagine that it's only getting worse.
You know, I know when we had Lieutenant Jeff Weninger on the show, we were talking, and Rich, you might have been on the same show where retired San Francisco police chief just took over the transit system for L.A. And, you know, because it was split between LAPD and the sheriff's office, which was a feat in itself. Right. And there was a lot. It just wasn't a perfect merge. And now they've got their own agency back trying to enforce it before the Olympics, the World Cup coming, Marlon, and all this other stuff going down, Rich.
You know, but Chip, I, at the end of the day, I don't care who's putting cuffs on these perps, these bad guys. The bottom line is, if they're not going to be prosecuted, you know, therein lies the problem. You think about it, you know, before you can become a police officer, you're a candidate, whether you're a cop candidate or a federal agent. They spend a lot of time and effort psychologically screening out candidates, asking you all sorts of questions about your ethics and your morals and your subversive leanings and your thoughts about the police and about criminology in general. Yet who's hiring these prosecutors? Nobody asks them what they think. And that's allowed these people, these liberals who never would have become prosecutors, to permeate that portion of the incredibly important part of the justice machinery here. And they're simply just not doing their job. And that's
Let me ask you another question then on that. I think we all would agree we have a mental health crisis in the country. I know that back when I started my career in 83, there were mental health facilities everywhere. And over the decades, I've seen those dry up. We still institutionalize mental health people, but we institutionalize them by putting them in prison. Do you see that as part of the problem? And do you see a possible solution for that?
Sure, it's a significant part of the problem. But then again, you know, I bring this back to the woke prosecutors, right? They won't allow the police to do their job. Look, if you come across an EDP, you've got one of two things you can do with them. Either arrest them and put them in jail, or get them to some mental health facility. But if you're telling the police and you're hamstringing these guys that you can't lay hands on somebody just because they're exhibiting some sort of mental health problem or they're in the mental health crisis, then what are you supposed to do with these people, right? Cops aren't, by their very nature, we're not just going to walk away from something. So jail's the only other option. What are you going to do here?
Right, right. And we do base our actions based on other people's actions. Good point. Frank?
Well, Chip, I was just thinking recidivism is so high right now. When you run the rap sheets on these people you're arresting, you got to change the printer. That you got to change the paper in the printer, because what's happening is you're seeing these people over and over again, the same people. And that's discouraging to a police officer when they've locked somebody up. And the next thing you know, you see them on the street the next day committing the same crime. It's a problem.
Excellent. And perfect timing, Frank. It's time for our first commercial break. Guys, stick with us. We will be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Galls at Galls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know that we can buy our gear from a lot of different sources, especially if we're looking online. There's a lot of choices, right? But I want to remind everybody here about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that fits that bill better than Galls at Galls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. Now they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking to support, law enforcement or organizations that support law enforcement, look no further than Galls at Galls.com and check them out and buy your gear there. And for the loyal listeners of the show, they're going to do you one better. They're going to give you a code where you get automatically 15% off your next purchase. It's Radio 15, so Radio 15. Type that in when you do your next purchase at Galls.com. That's good through June the 31st, and you'll get 15% off. They also have gift cards at Galls.com. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Galls gift card, and they'll be your new best friends, Galls.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. We are live with retired Secret Service Rich Steropoli, Frank Loveridge, and also we have Marlon, the IA guy from LAPD. So thanks, guys, for being on the show. You know, we just got done talking about how assaults against police officers on the subway in New York City have actually been increasing. I mean, everything's been going up about 66%, just mind-boggling. And we've been, talking about the effects, why that's happening, what the possible solutions might be as well. Anything else you guys want to say, or are you ready to move on to the next story? It looks like you guys...
I'll tell you something, Chip, that's worth mentioning. And this became incredibly valuable as a Secret Service agent. The Secret Service is one of the few federal agencies, and really the only one that actually does this. In lieu of an arrest, where we just take somebody, let's say, to Rikers Island or some sort of correctional facility, we have the ability to take somebody to a mental health facility such as Bellevue, which is pretty well known, and have them incarcerated for up to 72 hours just for a mental health just for the evaluation. That comes in tremendously helpful, plus doesn't tie me up to sit with this guy for 3 days while the prosecutors figure out what to do with this guy. So, you know, that's something I think more and more local police departments need to start thinking about doing. Drop the guy off at a mental health facility if you've got one.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Well, guys, let's move on to our next one. We're off to a good start here. You know, our next story, it's we're going to go to Seattle here for this one. Courthousenews.com, Supreme Court. And this is not the Washington State Supreme Court. This is the Supreme Court, SCOTUS. They snubbed Seattle cops seeking anonymity for the January 6th rally attendance. So listen, I'm kind of curious where you guys are at on this, but I guess being in Tampa, and I was supposed to be at the January 6th rally, by the way. I was supposed to go with a buddy of mine here, and we just didn't do it at the last minute. And I'm kind of glad I didn't go now. But the article starts off, Supreme Court rejected on Wednesday an anonymity request from current and former Siena police officers, and they're finding public records requests that would reveal information about their presence at the rally for President Donald Trump, and that was right before the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot. So in an apparent unanimous decision, which is rare, the justices actually denied the officers' appeal. This is plural, officers, all of them, their appeal to avoid disclosing their names in court records. Although they've been cleared of any wrongdoing, by their agency in the Capitol riot attack. And the officers argued that the disclosure would violate the First Amendment rights. So they just think they have a First Amendment right to keep their names out of it. The court did not explain the ruling, but Justice Samuel Alito, he wrote a concurring statement saying that the officer's application did not meet a high bar that was needed for emergency relief. Here's a quote saying the mandate of the Washington Supreme Court. So this is the lower court decision before that went to the Supreme Court. It was issued more than a month ago, and the applicants have not adequately explained why at this point they still feel face an imminent danger of irreparable harm. And that was what Alito said. And of course, he's a George Bush appointee. And Justice Clarence Thomas, who's also a Bush appointee, he joined Alito's statement on that. And it kind of goes on. It says that the four Seattle police officers, they actually attended the Trump Stop the Steal rally back on January the 6th in D.C. Now it talks about Trump's remarks. It kind of says that Trump caused the riot because of his statements. And it says that it was his supporters that did it. Now we have a little bit more information about who actually might have, caused the stuff to go on. But it's so hard to find accurate reporting these days. We all know what happened that day. The Seattle Police Department conducted an internal investigation that actually cleared the officers of wrongdoing. I remember when that went down, and those officers were in a world of hurt when people found out that they attended. But public records requests sought information about the officers who attended the rally, even though they were cleared by their own department. The officers sued to block the release of the internal report. And according to the officers, exposing their political beliefs would violate their First Amendment right to free expression, which kind of surprised me. Washington Court of Appeals, they actually sided with the officers, but the Washington State Supreme Court reversed it. And the state high court now that we're talking about said the police officers had not demonstrated that their privacy rights would be violated if their names were used in the proceedings, because they're just doing like the Jane and John Doe thing right now. Supreme Court precedent protects the compelled disclosure of political briefs, the officers argued. And they continued saying that these very private questions strike at the very core political speech that the government is now threatening to disclose publicly. The officers wrote that in the appeal. They also said, although the public is entitled to be informed concerning the workings of its government, this entitlement cannot be unlimited and inflated into general power to invade the constitutional privacy rights of individuals. And Justice Alito seemed to agree, stating that the Washington Supreme Court sidestepped the argument. So that's kind of where we're at. We've got a little over 2 minutes before we go to our next commercial break. Curious if you guys, Frank, I don't know if you were surprised about this as I was, but of course, remember, we're talking about, Seattle.
Well, I know we are, but police officers have a First Amendment right, just like everybody else. And doxing is a big thing right now that goes on, and we don't want their names getting out there. They need to be protected. I think this was a bad decision on the behalf of Seattle. But I will tell you this much, if I'll pivot to this for a second, we're going to find more about January 6th. I know that Dan Bongino, good friend of Richie and I, is looking into this. I think we're going to see there were some FBI sources in that crowd that could have provoked this. But this will all come out when they dig deeper into it. Cash Patel is looking into it. I think we're going to be surprised. I won't be surprised, but I think the public will be surprised at what they find out when they start looking at January 6th. But once again, getting back to the main point, these officers have the right to be protected. They're human beings. And to put their names out there, I think, was a very dangerous thing to do to them and their families. So I think that the Supreme Court may have got this one wrong.
I totally agree with you there, Frank, right? I'm not a big fan of that SCOTUS ruling whatsoever. What's the difference between this and a bunch of cops going to Manchester U Tottenham football game or a Dodgers Yankee game for that matter, and a riot breaks out, right? This isn't like these guys were attending a Klan rally or some sort of anti-Israeli rally where something's going to happen. They give up these guys' names, especially at this point. What good does that do but feed into the hands of the liberal Dems? Totally disagree with this decision.
Yeah, and you got to wonder if the officers are cleared, then all of a sudden people are doing public records requests to get the information. You got to kind of wonder, connect the dots. Why in the world is that even going on? Guys, we're coming up on our next commercial break, so I'll tell you what. We'll finish talking about this topic, and then we got some stories with video components that they're absolutely not going to want to miss. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys. In today's world, protection goes beyond physical safety. and is about safeguarding those on the front lines from what we call hidden threats. Now, that's where MITEQ, which is a division of Compliant Technologies, comes in. Now, MITEQ provides advanced protective solutions designed for law enforcement, corrections, and first responders. Their EcoProtect nitrile gloves, they offer four-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, and that gives you peace of mind in high-risk environments. Plus, their MyShield disinfectants and sanitizers, listen to this, they actually eliminate 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses on contact, and they continue to kill for up to 28 days, helping you stay protected both on and off duty. So when safety is non-negotiable, trust MITEQ to deliver the protection that you need. You can learn more about how to equip your team today by simply going to compliantechnologies.com/MITEQ. Again, that's compliantechnologies.com/MITEQ, because the best defense starts with the right protection. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to bluethegold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to bluethegold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up next week, June the 11th, Reasonable Suspicion Deep Dive. Great topic. Sign up at bluethegold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, because frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. That again, that is at bluethegold.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. We've got retired Secret Service Rich Deropoli, Frank Loveridge, and we've also got Marlon from LAPD. So thank you guys so much for being on the show. Appreciate it. Are you guys ready to move on to a new topic, or do you want to talk any more about the former one? If you guys ready for a video component, we've got a sensational one. So let me just say for our listeners, there's a lot of, look, it's hard to find a good news story of the day that does not have a video component. Okay. So the next two stories that we're going to cover have a video component, and it's pretty decent. It's something that you may want to see. So we'll always say this. If you're listening to the show audibly by your favorite podcast or radio station, please stay loyal to the outlets that are bringing you this good quality content. In return for that, we will describe in great detail what's going down so that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if we cover a video that you absolutely have to see, and it's likely that one of the next two might fit that bill, all you have to do is go to our Rumble channel called Leo Roundtable the very next day, because at 9 o'clock in the morning, our producer puts together a special version of the live show that aired the previous day. He'll release it at 9 o'clock Eastern time in the morning up on our Rumble channel. And he does that after he embeds every video that we talk about as we talk about it. He'll also put pictures of the good guys and the bad guys that pop up as we talk about them. It's really a great option for you. Plus, he does a little, you know, Photoshop with the panelists on the show, except for me. You know, he'll like Photoshop their pictures and stuff. See, Rich was looking down. As soon as I said that, he looked up. Look at that. I got his attention. So, but it's really a great way to watch a show. So on this one, rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter, body cam shows officers, plural, being stabbed twice in an ambush attack during a traffic stop.
I don't have it. Light gray box at the bottom.
Light gray.
Yeah, just down there. Perfect. Not an admission of guilt, just stating that you show up on or before the court date, okay?
I don't have to, as long as it's paid.
Stop! Stop!
Start me another.
Stop! Stop!
Nothing left. Just do me a favor, man. I've f***ed up my life.
Yes!
I only ask.
We need. Take the knife away from him.
Sir? I only ask.
See, drop it. Sir, drop it.
Can you do me this favor?
Sir, drop it. Drop it, sir. Sir, drop it. Please, drop it. Please, don't hurt anybody. Please. In the name of
Get
God.
Get on my radio.
Please don't drop anybody. Don't drop it. Sir, drop it. Sir.
So listen to this. Now we're in Edmond, Edmond, Oklahoma. So new video shows the moments that led to an Edmond police officer being stabbed and sent to a hospital more than a month ago. This happened on May the 1st. Edmond police officer Caleb Hodum, he had pulled over a car when he notices a guy coming over his shoulder. So I got to admit, he seemed pretty observant. And Officer Hodum and the suspect identified as suspects are always young, right? He's a 22-year-old young buck. He's got a cool name, Ocean Hudson. That's about the only thing cool about him, though. They end up getting involved in a fight that took both of them to the ground. It says the altercation occurred involving a knife and led to the officer being stabbed at least twice while urging our bad guy to stop. And shortly afterwards, a pedestrian comes up to help the officer out. I don't really like, I'm gonna abandon this story and I'm gonna go to my notes because they're really leaving so much good stuff out. And so when you watch it, the officer's given it's a traffic stop at the tail end of it. He's given the guy a warning. And then at the tail end, the officer, I don't know if he hears something, but or his peripheral vision, but he looks to his side and there's a guy walking up on him. And the guy or bad guy's got something in his hand. So the officer says, "Hey, what do you need?" Now, when this goes down, the driver he bamooses. He like takes off. He's not sticking around to see what's going to go on because the bad guy and the cop are talking by this time. So the bad guy walks to the cop. He's got pepper spray, puts it, like super close, just hoses the cop's face down. And we all know with pepper spray, it's involuntary. Your eyes are closing. The only way you can open up your eyes is to try to pry them with your fingers. And that's like literally impossible. So now the fight is on. The officer's blinded because of the pepper spray. And the bad guy ends up producing a knife during the fight. They go down to the ground. Body cam comes off the cop. It's kind of hard to tell what's going down until you get a picture of the body cam on the ground, and now it's showing the cop on top of the bad guy, but the cop's eyes are closed. He can't see. Cop's bleeding from the left side of his head, and now there's, verbiage going back and forth between the officer. Now, you see, when the body cam comes on and you see the cop on top of the bad guy, you see a hand on the cop's gun. It's not the cop's hand. It's the bad guy's gun. And so the cop tries to keep the gun holstered. I'm assuming he probably had like a level 3, which is, three steps you have to go through in order to remove the gun. But we all know it doesn't mean a lot if you've got a guy that's been spending, years in prison. That's all they do. They train about how to get past the security thresholds of these new level 3 holsters and stuff. So the cop's keeping the gun in the holster. And then we finally have a civilian that walks up, and the cop, you hear the civilians ask the cop if he needs help. Cop says yes. And he says, "Hey, get the knife out of his hand," because the cop at least knew the guy had a knife. But that didn't happen for quite a while. And then now there's some verbiage and stuff, going back and forth. I kept waiting, thinking the cop might pull the gun out and shoot the bad guy, but I have to assume that he didn't really know where the bad guy's hands were at, and that if he pulled the gun out to do that, it could have been a fight over the gun, which of course you wouldn't want, especially when you're blind. So the verbiage going on, the fight's continuing. Cop's got his eyes closed. He's bleeding pretty well from the head area, and at the 1:46 mark, the suspect asks the officer to actually shoot him because he has nothing to live for. At the 2-minute mark, civilian finally gets the knife out of the suspect's hand, and at 2:06, the cavalry arrives, right? The other cops get there, but it's not done. The guy continues the fight. They end up tasering him at the 3:10 mark, and he continues to resist, and they finally get the guy handcuffed and stuff, and that's the way it ends. But curious what you guys think about this. It's another good example on video about what cops have to go through, and this was an ambush, but I gotta say it could have been much worse because the cop could have been blindsided. At least he had a way to engage the guy and see what the guy looked like and what he had before he ended up being blinded. And he fought through it, And I think a lot of us, when we do OC pepper spray training and when we get exposed to that, just like being tased, they try to teach you to fight through this. Just don't automatically give up and think that this is going to be over. So we got about almost 5 minutes before we go to our next commercial break. Marlon, since you specialize in use of force and all this stuff, I know this is in your wheelhouse, buddy. Why don't you start us off on this?
Yeah, I specialize more in the IA process, but I do teach officer-involved shooting investigations as well. Look, first and foremost, heroic on the part of the officers. And what sucks about our culture is that we're going to critique every single move on behalf of the officer. And you know what? He is fighting for his life. You mentioned one good fact about this that I really want to point out is the fact that he is saying, "Shoot me, shoot me." That's your typical suicide by cop. And the fact that this officer, it's heroic on his part. He was fighting for his life. all bets are off in terms of what tactical application you're doing at the time. He's just trying to maintain, huffing and puffing, probably out of breath. You know, BJJ comes to mind, where, you know, it's super important to have those particular skill set, but you have to take all the totality of circumstances. And unfortunately, there's going to be some judgment, right? You're going to be critical about his every tactical application. But let's just keep in mind, especially us cops, man, we are the first ones to just say, well, you know, they could have done this. He could have done that. The fact of the matter is that he's fighting for his life, and he did whatever was necessary to survive, man. I mean, at one point, you're right. He's grabbing his gun, for crying out loud. And to your point, Chip, he didn't engage in any deadly force. And so when you start investigating what we call a law enforcement related injury, it's a major investigation. And let's just make sure, as this officer is going through the process, that, you know what, we don't keep them in the dark. We open up those lines of communication and let them know that, hey, look, you did what you had to do. You did a great job. And perhaps these are the kind of things that maybe, right, maybe we could have done different. Because one thing you got to keep in mind, and I'll wrap it up with this, whenever we apply force, what I've learned is that you're always going to get criticized for the things that you didn't do, as opposed to the things that you actually did.
Excellent. Well, gentlemen, Rich.
Well, Marlon, I'll just pick up on what you said. I think the cop did a great job. Put aside whatever the circumstances were that led to this guy walking up behind him while he's doing probably the most dangerous thing a cop can do, a car stop, right? Where you're going to somebody's house that's on wheels, right? And they've got an inherent weapon there. But you think about it, what struck me about this is how long this went on for. This guy's fighting, basically blinded. He's not only fighting for his life, but he's got to keep an eye on securing that weapon. 2.5, 3 minutes this goes on for. I'll tell you, that anyone that may be listening to this or watching this, how many things can you do that go on for 10 minutes where you're pushed to the point of physical exertion and you can't even see what you're doing? So I think the cop did a fantastic job. We can talk about how this happened later, but I think the guy did a great job.
Yeah, a lot of people, Frank, don't realize when you're in a fight how much energy it takes and how quickly, even if you're well-conditioned, how quickly you can get winded and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think the police get enough credit for what they have to go through. And you look at this situation, it goes 0 to 60 in no time at all. And basically, you're fighting for your life. You're impaired from pepper spray. But he did a superb job. And from what I'm seeing from the video, and also when I did the, I have to say my hat's off to the police officers there on the front lines. People just don't understand. It's easy to critique it after it's all over. But when you go through it and you realize what's really happening out there, I think the police officer did an amazing job at protecting his life and taking the individual.
Yeah, I wish I would have gotten the tag number of that civilian that drove away and left the cop, you know, the fight blinded. You know, that really bothered me. I'm assuming the guy that showed up to help the cop out probably was not the same guy that was in the car that he stopped. And the driver probably, you're going to give me a warning. I mean, you got a warning ticket. I mean, come on, the cop gave you a solid, you know, help him out. You know, gee, there's even statutes in a lot of places that say that you have an obligation. But yeah, good commentary, gentlemen. We've got another story coming up, and you're going to have to hold it for a second because we've got a commercial break coming up, and I just looked at the clock, so I'm a little late on the draw, but I'm going to start the music. We're coming up for our last commercial break, guys. We got a fantastic, amazing story coming up. You don't want to miss that. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Apianko. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you're listening to this program and you have your own agency, your chief or sheriff, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to gunlearn.com to get more information. And again, that URL, it's gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable, guys, at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. You know, we left off talking about a pretty wild situation on a traffic stop. cop gets approached and basically ambushed by a bad guy with pepper spray. And now the bad guy's dealing with a blind cop, essentially, and he has a knife. The bad guy does, and he starts stabbing the cop, and there's a fight, and the cop, he sticks it out and blinded and bites this guy, and they end up getting the bad guy, and the bad guy ends up surviving by some miracle. Great ending on that one. This next story, Rumble.com, again, the channel is our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have man charges at a sergeant with a knife, resulting in a fatal shooting at an assisted living facility.
Get down.
So this goes down. I think that there were some things to learn from this, and I think it's important to cover. It's not so much Monday morning quarterbacking as it is that with everything that goes down, it's always important to critique and then try to learn from an experience, because rarely things go perfectly. I was not a perfect officer. I mean, I've gotten off it. Even in my FTO program, I got out on a traffic stop and I forgot to put the car in park. And my FTO never saw it. And I'm walking up and the car's moving. I have to jump in and do it, put it back in. And she never knew it. But, you know, we all do stupid stuff, but it's important to learn from this stuff. So we're in Chicago. Newly released body cam video. It shows a deadly confrontation between Chicago police officers and a man that has a knife and he's at an assisted living facility. And it's a butcher knife. So it all starts about 2:50 in the morning. So it's pretty early in the morning. This old guy should be sleeping, but it's Monday, May 6th. Officers respond to a call and they say there's a person with a butcher knife threatening residents inside the Grand Regency of Jackson Park Supportive Living Center. It sounds like a nice place, right? Grand Regency of Jackson Park. Now, they advertise this place. It's a program for adults between the ages of 22 and 64 with physical disabilities who need help maintaining their independence. The officers get there to the unit where the guy lives. He doesn't want to open up the door. They have keys to the unit. They open up the door from the outside, and now they open up the door. And as soon as they open up the door, you see the bad guy in there. And look, I'm calling him a bad guy. I know he's got issues, and he's an assisted living facility, but he's non-compliant with the police, and he's got a knife. So he qualifies as a bad guy. Sorry, civilians, but he does. So the door opens up. Now, when the officers see the guy with a knife, I'm going to go in and jump to what happens, because again, the story is not descriptive enough. Our bad guy, he's only 47, so he's relatively young. His name is Alfonso Wright. And so we have a ton of cops that are in the hallway. And the first cop that steps into the doorway inside the apartment that confronts our bad guy that's armed with a knife, he's got a taser. And you've got the cop behind him has also got a taser, because we can see this on body cam. And then you do have some cops that have lethal out. But the closest guy in has got the taser. So he ends up tasing our bad guy twice. He tases him the first time. Bad guy charges the guy with the taser immediately. And our bad guy even makes a statement, hey, don't make me tase you again. So he fires off the taser again. It's not effective. Bad guy now is engaging in a fight with the officer that tased him now twice, but there's been no lethal fire yet. So this cop is now in a position where he's got, you know, a taser in one hand. He's trying to fight the guy off with a knife, with a butcher knife that's attacking him. Now, it says that no one got cut and stabbed. I don't know how they eventually lit this guy up, and police ended up finding another guy in the building, a 58-year-old named Keith Harding, that actually had been stabbed to death in the same building. They think that this bad guy had stabbed to death this other dude before police got called and got into it with him. And it said that, anyhow, that's the latest and the greatest on that. So the man charged the sergeant with a knife, resulted in a fatal shooting at this assisted living facility. And that's the way it went down. Before talking about tactics, I'll let you guys, you know, jump into that. I know normally on the show we talk about, even if you're going to go less lethal, like in this case with a bad guy, if you're going less lethal with a guy that's got an edge weapon or a gun, like, you're not going to go less lethal with a gun, but if it's with an edge weapon, have somebody with lethal that has your back so that the situation doesn't go south. And I think we're very fortunate that this ended without any officers getting stabbed or hurt, Frank. But what do you think?
So I think it comes down to action versus reaction. And you have to process that information so quick to make a decision on whether or not to take someone's life or not. I'll go back to days in the Secret Service on the rope line. When you're working the rope line with the president, you got the cameras up there, you got the lights on you. Someone pulls out a pen on the rope line and you're looking at that real quick to make a decision on whether that's going to be a threat or not. You have to make that split decision. That's what these officers are tasked with every day, is making a decision with really within a second on how to react to something like that. And it's a difficult task to do. And I think that in this case, the officers did what they had to do to neutralize that situation. And I applaud them for it.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I would have liked to have seen lethal use before they allow the bad guy to get close to the guy with the taser. I know the being confined in that apartment, and the doorway was really the most restrictive because you can only get one person through that doorway at a time.
Right.
But I mean, just for future, I'm hoping these guys wouldn't do that same scenario the same way, because we should have a cop stabbed and seriously injured. I mean, really, that's what should have happened in that situation. It's just a gift from God that it didn't happen. In my opinion, right. Rich.
Well, I think the other problem is that people who are not police officers or who are used to working in that first responder environment tend to think that this taser is the end all. Well, people forget you need space to fire this thing. You've got to hit this guy, you know, twice, because it doesn't do any good if one barb sticks in the guy, but both of them have to stick. They've got to penetrate whatever clothing this guy's may be wearing. And, you know, listen, if the guy's on some sort of narcotics, LSD, whatever, it may be totally useless anyway, right? So given that environment, this taser thing, I'm 50-50 on that, because it doesn't really work all the time, right? So you absolutely Chip, you're right. You need someone in close proximity that's ready to go to lethal. I mean, I'm sure Marlon, having been in uniform, can speak to this much more articulately than I could. But that taser thing, I'm not really sold on that in every situation.
Yeah, we've gotten it's our own fault. I mean, I'm talking about law enforcement. We've got guys graduating from academies. They don't have enough defensive tactics training. They're relying on the taser, like Rich just said, for everything, right? It's the catch-all. It's the answer to everything. And now we have a reluctance of cops, Frank, to go hands-on. I mean, in our day, that's what we live for, right? I mean, you got to but anyhow, there was a reluctance to go hands-on for whatever reason.
But Rich is right. In retrospect, I mean, obviously going lethal would have been the way to go. But the thing is that you did something. You reacted as quickly as possible to try to neutralize the threat. And obviously that would have been the best scenario. But the thing is, you have to do something and act quickly. And they did. Unfortunately, it took more than just the taser actually to take them down. And too bad a police officer was stabbed in the event.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, they said no cops were stabbed. But I certainly, if I would have been the officer with the taser, stepped in. Well, number one, I wouldn't have stepped in inside that narrow doorway if I had to do over again. But I would be having some words or maybe a physical confrontation with the dude that was supposed to have my back that had the lethal. Because I'm fighting up a dude with a knife. At close quarters, Marlon.
Yeah, I was just gonna mention that. What's the best way to put this? The industry norm, when you come out of the academy, I want to say now, maybe in the last 5 years, is this buzzword de-escalation. So you can use less lethal force to de-escalate. So what happens is that, the practice and the theory is to go in there, hey, you know what? Let me use this less lethal force to see if I can get him to drop this knife at the same time. So everything, it's textbook. Here's the bottom line, Chip. Look, it's a good shoot. What cops have the challenge, right? The uphill battle is to be able to justify it. It's a good shoot, but it's a good shoot, however, and it all comes down to perception. And that's where the uphill battle is in terms of justifying, because we can all agree and we all know that when you engage in deadly force, it's a homicide. The question is, can you justify your actions? And a lot of it has to do with, to your point, thank God no one got stabbed. But this de-escalation and teaching people less lethal force before we actually engage in deadly force, I don't know. You know what? That industry norm maybe has to be revisited. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd like to see them change tactics on this. I think it was a tactical issue. I just think that they had a guy there calling the shots. I just think that, and look, I know I'm Monday morning quarterback, but I don't want to see a cop get hurt or killed. So I hopefully they're doing debriefs on this and they're pointing out things that we it's definitely for people that know and that have been in the space, you know what could have been done differently. You know what I'm saying? In order to not have a repeat performance, because next time this happens, we're going to get a cop seriously injured or killed. But I great commentary, guys, great coverage on this. We're kind of winding it down. Rich Deropoli, thank you so much. Frank Loveridge, Marlon, hey, the IA Guy podcast. How can people find you on the IA podcast? And Rich has got pretty lips when he moves them without the mic being open, doesn't he? But
Sorry about that. Yeah, you know, the IA guy on the YouTube channel, or just go to the search button and push internal affairs, and I will populate. I really appreciate the shout and the support, Chip.
All right, you got it. So, guys, I usually take this opportunity to talk about the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Rainey Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. So consider supporting the Wounded Blue. I do monthly, and it's a great organization. And the nice thing is they're not going to embarrass you. So great organization. A shout out again to our sponsors, Gauls at Gauls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, GunLearner.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, SafeGuard Recruiting, and also Two Bells. Check out our new online store at Leah Roundtable. We got cool gear like this shirt right here. And we don't charge extra. I pay what you pay. And also, look, all the outlets that make the show happen, we're so appreciative. Guys, have a wonderful and safe weekend. We'll look for you back on Monday, 12 noon Eastern.